We rapidly have people joining up here, so I think we're close to when we should get going here. Everyone, welcome to for the East Coast of the U.S., midday talk here for Europe, evening talk, owl talk. We're really excited to have Ivan Stepanov here to talk about the nuclear war simulator game that he's created, about his views on the war in Ukraine, to allay some of the fears we've had on the server about nuclear weapons, and to talk about his history, which is really, really interesting. So why don't we start there? Ivan, again, really, really appreciate you doing this. We actually had users say you should go get Ivan to come here and do a talk for us. And me, I'm a complete boomer in internet ages, and I didn't actually know what the game was. So I went and did some research on it. It looks super rad. We had Covert Cabal on last week with his partner, and both of them said that they had played a little bit of the game and they're really excited about it. So we're really stoked to have you here to talk about it. Thank you for agreeing to.
Okay, yes. Thank you very much for inviting me. I see a lot of people are joining. I hope you will not be disappointed. I think almost everyone is from your server. I don't see anyone from the Nuclear War Simulator server yet, but I see that Covert Cabal is also here. So, yes, thank you very much.
Cool. Well, why don't we get started with your history, your childhood, which is interesting. So you actually grew up in Semipalatinsk in Kazakhstan, which was the Soviet Union's testing ground for all of their nuclear weapons. Can you tell us a little bit about your childhood and what it was like growing up there, and maybe a little bit about Kazakhstan?
Yes, sure. So Kazakhstan is a former Soviet republic, and Semipalatinsk is the test site where most of the nuclear weapons were tested, at least by numbers. So the high-yield nuclear weapons were tested in the north, at Novaya Zemlya, where also the Tsar Bomba was tested, but a large number of smaller nuclear weapons were tested at the Semipalatinsk test site. So there were, I think, almost 500 nuclear weapons tests, and over 100 were above the ground. And these above the ground tests produced quite some fallout and affected the areas around the nuclear weapons test site. So I was born in 1985, about 4 years before the last test. However, the city itself was far enough away to not be affected by the radiation. So there were a couple of accidents where radiation escaped the test site, but it missed the city, so the city was actually never affected by the radiation. But still, the history of this nuclear weapons test site was a large part of the culture of the city. So everybody experienced this nuclear weapons tests when they were done underground as earthquakes. So usually people were warned that tests will be done and had to leave the buildings, so everybody was experiencing them. And one of my family members was actually working at this test site and building the tunnels for the underground nuclear weapons tests. And there were regular newspaper articles about the test site. There were a number of information programs writing these articles and working on keeping the history alive and to spreading the awareness about the victims of the tests. And I was collecting newspaper articles, and there was a lot of information in the library where I also spent some time, and I was kind of collecting all the information I could on this topic.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. You have some of these old newspaper articles from the 80s and early 90s on your website, and they're really interesting to go through because they're actual historical documents, and you know, a lot of people don't see newspapers at all anymore. I was curious about just kind of like your motivation for putting those on your website.
The motivation was just to put the information out there. So it is not, I didn't find it in a digital form anywhere. And I think they are quite interesting. So I translated them and put it on the website so people can read them and maybe get some information that the locals were getting about the test site. And there are quite a lot of different stories. Some articles are longer, some articles are super short, and very often people writing about their health problems, how they don't get enough money to buy the medicine.
And I should say at this point, if anyone wants to check those out, go to nuclearwarsimulator.com. There's also a ton of videos of the game that's upcoming, and you can check out kind of what it looks like. And Ivan has translated a lot of these, so you can read all these articles that he's speaking about, which is very cool. And again, let me also say, if you have any questions and you're on, you know, you can't be on voice, drop it into the Owl Talks channel. And if you want to ask a question on voice later on, raise your hand and we'll get to some in-voice questions a little bit later. So,
yes, please.
Ivan, moving along, let's get into the current. Tell us about your current work, which is also very interesting.
You mean my day job?
Yes, exactly.
So I am working as a simulation engineer in the automotive industry. So I did a PhD in physics, working on experiments with lasers, semiconductors, high-frequency electronics. And I was doing quite a lot of simulations already there to design these experiments to make sure that they work before conducting them. And after graduating, I got a job as a simulation engineer working on LiDAR sensors.
Wow.
So what I'm doing now is kind of make computer games for self-driving cars. So to test and train the object detection algorithms for self-driving cars to create the data synthetically. So it's, I'm interested in optics and photography, and this is kind of a combination of the interest.
That is super cool. And I noticed that you're at University of Aachen, and I was actually living not too far from there last year.
Oh, really?
And if I was still there, I'd buy you a beer after this, but sorry, next time.
Oh, cool.
I was going to ask you, so you do simulations for vehicles now, and obviously it seems like you like to be at the cutting edge of things. You've gone from living in a nuclear weapon area to doing LiDAR work. Has the simulation work that your day job has you doing, was that somewhat the inspiration for Nuclear War Simulator?
The work itself, not really. I actually the other way around. I started to work on the Nuclear War Simulator before I got the job, and I was even talking about it at my job interview.
Really?
But it's very much related. So the topic is completely different, but the methodology is similar. So, and I'm coding there, I'm coding here. And
How long have you been working on the game?
About 5 years now.
Wow. So I've had a bunch of questions. Is there a release date coming up?
There is no fixed release date yet, but hopefully we can do it early next year.
Very cool. That is rapidly approaching, and smart not to give a date because I know this server will hold your feet to the fire on that. So we'll let everyone know when it comes out.
Yeah, actually, it had to be shifted a couple of times already, and I know people get impatient. I just don't want to give any false promises.
Well, you know, one thing I noticed when I was going through kind of your videos in the background around the game is it seems like it is built on a ton of realistic data. And I know you've mentioned to me a couple times the open RISOC data as well, which we'll also get into. But can you talk about kind of synthesizing that real world data and making it into some, you know, a usable, fun informational thing?
So getting the data is actually one of the biggest challenges. So one challenge is to find and implement the models for, let's say, for ballistic missiles, for how the weapons behave, and or how the nuclear weapons affect the populations. And the other challenge is collecting the data on the objects on the ground, on where the weapons are positioned, where other objects are. And there, I kind of spent a lot of time looking for all this information and collecting bits and pieces there. And OpenRISOP is one of such projects that helped a lot to get this information. And
I was gonna pick your brain a little more on that, because mm-hmm. you know, we have a lot of talk on here, and even more recently, about the possible use of nuclear weapons between Russia and Ukraine. And you know, at any given day, any conversation here can devolve into nuclear weapon talk, and everyone still sees them as kind of, you know, that Hiroshima leveling type of weapon that it just does catastrophic damage. We know they're, and they are terrible weapons, right? But how did you actually find this realistic data? Like how did, that's not easy stuff to find. So how did you actually go about doing that, finding it, making it actually make sense in your game? Because there's a lot of adjustable parameters that you use.
Actually, it's easy. It's easy to find it because, there is, for example, this Glassstone repository on GitHub where a number of effect codes are deposited as Python code. So you have models for overpressure, thermal radiation, for fallout, and this is where I started. So this was the first models I implemented. And there are also a number of books with models. And you can get it from there. And then I got support in developing further models, for example. Right now, there is a possibility to couple the nuclear war simulator with the high-split particle transport model to create some very detailed fallout simulation. And there I got some support from Sebastian Philippe, who is a researcher at Princeton and who wrote some very good paper on the topic of fallout. And he helped me to implement this fallout model.
Wow.
There is actually a lot of information online. There is a lot of stuff if you're looking for it.
So this is a little more advanced than World of Tanks, it sounds like. A little better than that.
I'm not sure. I never played World of Tanks, but I only heard that people are posting some classified information.
Oh, that's true. Hey, maybe World of Tanks is just as good as Nuclear War Simulator. So I was going to actually ask you about that. What is sort of your vision for the game as it comes out? You know, when I think about people trying to figure out effects of nuclear weapons, Alex Wallerstein's Nuke Map comes to mind. You know, tons of people use that, right? But your game program seems even more, I guess, fleshed out than that, because like you said, the modeling that it gives you is much more detailed. So yeah, what is your vision kind of where this goes?
So the vision where it goes is there are different directions that it can go, and I think the most promising direction is to work on more details, you know, on the humanitarian effects, on how such a conflict would affect the population and the humanitarian civilian infrastructure, how it would affect individuals, so you can kind of create stories about such conflicts and make it more, on one side, more human, and help people maybe plan for such events, and make everyone aware of how these things can evolve. So this is the one side. The other side is, of course, the military side. So what is the dynamics of such a conflict? For example, how the ballistic missiles are moving, what is the timing, how units are dispersing. So all of this is very much relevant, and maybe it will contribute to understanding how such a conflict evolves, what is the speed, and also which weapons can contribute to stability or instability of this whole system. For example,
I was going to ask you, do you have a little bit of a personal experience with that kind of humanitarian aspect of it? You know, you were probably 4 or 5 when that final warhead was tested in St. Palatinsk, so I'm sure you have some experience with the after effects of that. Can you speak about that at all?
So I wasn't affected myself, and nobody in my family was affected, because we were far away from the test site. We were in St. Palatinsk, so the city is actually like 100, 150 kilometers away from the test site. But there are a lot of stories of people who are affected by it. And in the city itself, there is actually a museum where you can see like glasses with conserved stillborn babies with all kinds of birth defects that was a result of the radiation.
Wow. Have you been to the test site? Because I know it's one of the few public testing sites you can actually visit.
Unfortunately not, because I was I was 15 years old when we left Kazakhstan, and I didn't have the resources to go there.
So that makes sense.
Now I would definitely visit it, but back then I didn't have the possibility to, or anybody to drive me there.
Well, let me know when you go and I'll go with you.
Oh, sure.
Okay, so I'm going to jump to a user question. I was just kind of looking around and I found one here. Nuclear War Simulator is not a game that you can win in a traditional sense. There's not really a narrative tied to it, right? It's more kind of creating your own situations and seeing how they can unfold, right?
Exactly, yeah. So there are no predefined goals. It's more like a storytelling tool, or you can develop your own stories. But you can try to set your own goals. So, for example, you can try to take out, you can try to create a situation where you can try to, let's say, control.
Take out DC in one hit.
Sorry?
Like, take out DC in one hit.
Yeah, or try to take out the enemy forces without minimizing retaliation. Or you can try to set up early warning systems and somehow try to sneak by this early warning system, sneak around the radar detection codes.
Interesting.
So you can do this on the military side, or what you can do is you can control individual humans on the map, and you can import yourself, your family, your friends, and you can move them on the map. You can take shelter.
Jeez.
You will. There is a time-resolved fallout model, so it models how the fallout cloud arrives at your location and how it decays, so you can try to test different strategies of what are you doing in such a conflict. Are you hiding in your basement? Are you trying to run away? You can kind of try to survive it. So this is one of the goals you can set yourself.
So that's a funny thing you just said. I mentioned to you that I've done quite a bit of research as well on nuclear weapons. And a question that I get a lot from people is, what would you do in a nuclear weapon, you know, situation? And I usually joke, you know, put your head between your legs and just think about your life. And usually people say, no, seriously, what should I do? What do you say when people say that?
So the official recommendations to get inside, stay tuned, I guess.
Right.
Like to get
away from windows.
Away from windows, get into your basement or somewhere behind walls at the center of your building where you are away, where you have something between you and the fallout. Stay there for at least a couple of days and listen to radio broadcasts, and don't try to run away, because you cannot predict where the fallout will go. Because the wind on the ground is totally different than the wind the higher layers of the atmosphere where the fallout is actually moving. So there is no way you can predict it. And if you try to run away, there is a chance that you will be caught by the fallout. And it's just much better to stay where you are, where you have some water, you have some food, where you have some shelter, and at least to wait for the fallout to decay and to wait for evacuation.
That is official Project Owl nuclear strike advice. So thank you. What are your thoughts, Ivan, on games that center on nuclear war having points tied to, you know, destroying other places or killing people?
I think I played them all, but I never enjoyed them. And this is probably the reason why I started making the nuclear war simulator. So I played DEFCON, this, I think it was First Strike. There is this game by Paradox that was never released, East versus West. And this is something that I was trying to modify, make it more realistic, but I was always frustrated that they are not realistic and the goal is to kill people. And it's kind of also not a very realistic goal. So
how did you get into programming? I mean, you're obviously a very smart guy, but how did you get into actually computer programming and deciding after playing these games to kind of say, no, I want to make my own?
Mostly in the university. When we had to design an experiment of electron transport in graphene, and we wanted to create a simulation, a time-resolved simulation of how the electrons will be moving through graphene, what will be the signal, and how we can optimize this experiment. So then this is where I started coding seriously, and it evolved from there. So then when I was studying in the Netherlands, I visited a course on simulation where everything got a little bit more more structured, and later I was, I started developing the nuclear war simulator. Actually, I didn't know C sharp, the main language that nuclear war simulator is done in.
Really?
Before starting the project, so I learned C sharp in order to make the nuclear war simulator.
Interesting. Nice. That's a good project to learn.
Oh yeah.
There's another question from a user. What kind of recommendations would you give for an aspiring game developer?
Probably don't do it. choose something else. But if this is your passion, then you have no choice. And I don't know.
Yeah,
try to make something new, something that you think people need, and try to be open about the developments. When you develop it, share it with other people. Share. Don't wait until your stuff is ready. But share your progress with other people on Twitter or Discord or Reddit, so you can get some feedback. And
So I was gonna actually ask you about that. I know that you have shared the game with some people. I know Covert mentioned that he's played it. Eric, his partner, mentioned that he's also played it, and they were both very excited about it. How have you seen people using the game? Have you seen people using the game in ways that you didn't expect, or you know, kind of like that initial feedback once you did start going out? Have you been surprised by anything?
Not really. So, what I have been surprised by is mostly how detailed people make their scenarios, or how large they make them. So, for me at least, the most fun I have is programming and designing the systems and creating the models and creating the tools for other people.
Nice.
I have hard time finding the time to create scenarios myself. But I see people creating like really massive scenarios with lots of units, and where countries are obliterated. So this is something that I didn't expect. So, yeah.
To what level of detail does the game represent an actual nuclear weapon exchange?
So it is limited to the nuclear weapons exchange itself. So there is no conventional phase. It all starts with the nuclear weapons exchange.
Gotcha.
And what is represented is the movement of the nuclear weapons, how the units are dispersing, how the aircraft is flying, how the missiles are flying. To some degree, the early warning system there. So there are early warning radars, and there are early warning satellites. So you can actually create an AI that will observe these early warnings, and it will react or launch on warning. So there is a little bit of command and control, but mostly it is focused on the weapons themselves.
Interesting.
I am trying to make it as simple as possible, or to spend as little development time as possible. So I can spend more time on the civilian infrastructure, on the humanitarian side, because this is where people are. This is where every one of us will be affected by it.
So that's a good transition into a couple other questions that I wanted to ask you. What are kind of your views on non-proliferation and disarmament in kind of our current world?
So actually, I really don't like nuclear weapons. And I think we have to try to eliminate them, or at least reduce their numbers if possible. I think that for example, how Russia and United States built up their arsenals with thousands of nuclear weapons is just irresponsible. And in case of an accident, it will be probably the end of the human civilization. But I'm also trying to shut up about it and not to force my views on anybody, and instead try to present this information in a neutral way and let everybody make their own conclusions.
I think that's a pretty common view among people who study nuclear weapons, is that, you know, they're very, very interesting, but all of us wish they didn't exist and that we never had to think about them, because it is kind of like a, you know, a standoff with everyone pointing a gun at each other. With regard to kind of the current situation between Russia and Ukraine, do you lose sleep over it at night? Do you think there's any real possibility that we're going to see a nuclear weapon exchange?
I lose sleep sometimes, and then I get used to it. So I had difficulties to sleep in the early weeks of the conflict. And so recently, after the announcement of mobilization and after Putin announced the annexation of the areas. But then you get used to everything, and now I'm mostly fine, but still, this is a situation that I'm very much worried about, and I think it is not possible to give a probability that nuclear weapons will be used there, but I feel like everything is going in this direction. And
it does kind of feel like that.
Yeah.
Something I've thought about a lot, and I was arguing with some people yesterday about this, was if we see a nuclear weapon used, you know, in this day and age, I think it's going to really fundamentally change the world that we live in, not due to, you know, the size of the weapon or anything like that, just due to the principles of it. How do you feel about that idea of them being used now?
It's horrible. It's we have to do everything to prevent it, because you're right, it would change the world in the sense that after Hiroshima and Nagasaki, we have preserved this nuclear taboo that nuclear weapons should not be used, that they are forbidden. They are only a weapon of last resort. And if Russia is able to use them and get away with it, it will be a horrible message to everyone that you can use them, and you can even win a war of aggression with them.
Definitely. Something you just made me think about, speaking about the early warning systems you can kind of program in the game. In a hypothetical attack, or even in the game, how early are people normally alerted to something like that happening? And, you know, thinking of Russia's system, which is pretty submarine heavy as well, how much forewarning do you think we would have if something was going to happen?
nuclear weapons used in Ukraine, I think it will be very early. My expectation is even that even before nuclear weapons will be used in Ukraine, we will see maybe a nuclear test somewhere away, just to message that that they're serious about using them. And we will probably see some movement of the forces, and we will probably see how tactical nuclear weapons are being moved from storage to the delivery systems, because all tactical nuclear weapons are in storage, and storage sites are constantly under observation. And at least right now, we don't see any real movement of them. So it is unlikely that we will see any nuclear weapons used in the next couple of weeks. So I think there will be some time before.
That's a really interesting answer. And thank you for the detail on that, because there's been a lot of concern from people that, you know, it would happen overnight and we would never know we were even kind of spiraling towards it happening. But there's a really good point about kind of the key indicators that we would see leading up to that. And you made me think about two other questions. One is, so Russia has the escalate to de-escalate policy, which they've written into their kind of war doctrine. Do you think that makes this situation more tenuous? Do you think that there's a real possibility? So you mentioned, you know, using a nuclear weapon as a signaling device to kind of what's about to come. Do you see that as kind of like a real possibility?
Absolutely. I think it can become the option of last resort. It probably will not help with the situation on the ground, because militarily, the nuclear weapons are mostly useless. But in his desperation, Putin might try to just do something to stay alive and to move on, to do the next escalation step, because he's pressured to it by the people around him. And
so you made me think about another thing. I think there's a lot of confusion around the terms strategic weapons and tactical weapons. And you know, the news loves to now say tactical weapons. It's the kind of hot term, right? And I think a lot of people, when they think about tactical weapons, think about that old U.S. mortar tests where they shot, you know, a mile away and blew up a nuclear mortar. Can you talk kind of about the differences between the two? Maybe give some light on that?
So often people are separating tactical and strategic nuclear weapons by their yield. Mm-hmm. Usually people say that strategic nuclear weapons have larger yield than tactical nuclear weapons, and for countries like Russia and United States, it sometimes makes sense. But in general, even nuclear weapons that we consider as tactical have yields that can destroy a city. Or, for example, some gravity bombs that United States were using have yields of 300 kilotons, and this is about...
Right. That's huge.
That's huge, and the separation is mostly in how you use them. So you usually use tactical nuclear weapons on the battlefield and strategic nuclear weapons to attack cities or key infrastructure sites.
Interesting. Okay. Thank you for that. That's, I think it's a confusing thing to people who aren't, you know, totally in the know about these topics. We have a couple other really interesting questions coming in here. So it's reminding me, I was watching a debate here in the US the other night, and two of the candidates were just throwing around, you know, oh, well, Russia's going to nuke Poland and then we'll be, NATO will be at war at Russia. And, you know, it gives me heartburn just to hear people even theorize about those sort of possibilities. If something were to happen on NATO territory, how do you think NATO would respond if there was, you know, a nuclear weapon used on Ukraine? So this is, I guess, a two-part question. If there's a nuclear weapon used on Ukraine, how do you think NATO would respond? And if there was a weapon used against a NATO, you know, some part of NATO land, how do you think they would respond?
We cannot know. If nuclear weapons are used in Ukraine, we are hearing some public messaging that NATO will attack Russian forces in Ukraine, in Crimea, in the Black Sea with conventional weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure they will not use nuclear weapons in this case. But even if they use conventional weapons, actually, I think it's crazy. It's something that will probably lead to further escalation because it already has no very limited options to respond to this conventionally. So all they can do is use nuclear weapons to respond to it, and they will be forced to respond to it. So
that's exactly my feeling as well. I think it's a really dangerous route to take. It's a rock and hard place in the worst type of way.
Yes, and if nuclear weapons are used on NATO territory, then it's difficult to say if NATO will respond to it with nuclear weapons to send message that they are ready to escalate, or they will respond to it with conventional weapons to send a message that it is irresponsible to use nuclear weapons, that it is not, because it is not really necessary for NATO to use nuclear weapons, at least early in the conflict.
So here's another question, sort of shifting topic a tiny bit, but there's a bit of speculation about, you know, what's going to happen with Putin. Will there ever be a coup? Will the Soviet Union, will Russia stay together? Will we have another Soviet Union moment? Will it fall apart? You've actually been through this, you know, being in Kazakhstan, going through the Soviet Union falling. Do you think it's plausible nowadays for the West and NATO and the EU and the US and the rest of the world to actually, in that situation, come in and control the stockpiles that Russia has? Do you think there'd be, like, is it even plausible that we could have another, I don't want to say safe breakup like the Soviet Union has, but like a soft landing, I guess, if Russia were to do that?
This time I very much doubt it, because last time it was an economic collapse where there was a competition with NATO, but there wasn't such kind of conflict, almost direct conflict that we have right now.
That's a great point.
Now we have almost a direct conflict, and a lot of people are actually believing this story that Russia is fighting NATO and somehow they are defending Russia from NATO in Ukraine. And I think it will be very difficult for any NATO be in Russia to somehow secure the stockpiles.
That's interesting. Yeah, thank you for that. I had never actually thought about that until I just saw this question. Another question just came in, and I think this is a really interesting one. Can you explain the difference between a normal nuclear weapon and a dirty bomb? And the difference kind of in their fallout. And I love this question because this is something that I've researched heavily as well.
I think, so in normal nuclear weapon, you have the energy produced by fission, maybe some fusion, where you have some weakly radioactive material like uranium or plutonium, and then this material produces energy, and the byproducts of this reaction are highly radioactive. So this creates the fallout. And as I understand, in a dirty bomb, you don't get your energy from a nuclear reaction, but instead it's just conventional explosives, but you pack it with some material that is already highly radioactive, and you just disperse it over an area. And this is something that much more localized produces less contamination, but it's also much easier to achieve. So you just need some explosives, some radioactive stuff that you get from some maybe medical equipment, and you're good to go.
You know, that's such an interesting thing. One of the topics that I've done a lot of research on is the use of dirty bombs by terrorist organizations. And it is something just sort of fascinating that there's been so few uses of them ever. I think there's been, there's never been a use. There's been three attempts. But it, you know, like you said, it's a pretty low cost way to get something like that done. And it's a good thing that we've never really seen it happen.
Yeah.
So you've modeled a lot of fallout as well. And in with your game, when it comes to these sort of weapons that Russia might use, do you think that there's any risk of fallout going into a NATO country or going somewhere it doesn't, you know, where they don't expect it to go? And with tactical weapons, is there really a concern about fallout?
So there is always concern about fallout, but if they are used in Ukraine, it is actually rather unlikely that the fallout will go to NATO territory. Because I recently I did a tweet with some simulations of fallout after a couple of detonations in Ukraine, and most of the time the wind is blowing direction. Sure.
Oh, great.
So you have to, you actually have to look for a specific date where the wind is blowing direction west. And usually it's not fast enough to carry the fallout into NATO territory.
That's really interesting.
And the other factor is that probably they will be smart enough to not use a ground burst, where you lift a lot of dirt, where you create the fallout, but instead it will probably be an air burst, producing much less fallout. But still, there is a danger that it will rain out. So it is not always predictable. So sometimes people say, you can just have an air burst, but even with an air burst, you can get fallout, like there was fallout in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, despite it being an airburst.
So we have a couple minutes left here. I want to ask the crowd that is in the stage here, if anyone wants to ask a voice question, feel free to raise your hand. I'll bring you up. It doesn't look like we have anyone right now, but we've had a lot of questions in the Owl chat room, and I appreciate that. One question I've not been able to get to yet, Ivan, is will this game be available for Mac? I've had that question a couple times.
Maybe later, but not in the near future. The issue with Mac is that it does not support compute shaders, and the Nuclear War Simulator is using compute shaders heavily in order to calculate the effects on the population. So I actually tried to run it on Mac with an emulator, and most of the simulation works. It is possible to run it, but the effects on the population density map will not be calculated because there is no support for the compilers.
Interesting. Well, PCs are superior. Everyone knows that. I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of hate for saying that. Okay, so let's end here on a down note and a high note. I want to ask you, what is your nightmare scenario for the end of this Ukraine and Russia conflict? And what is your kind of like ideal scenario for how this ends?
Oh, geez. I think the nightmare scenario is that it escalates to an all-out nuclear war, where both sides lose hope to control the escalation and just send everything they have. And in this case, Russia will be destroyed, Europe will be destroyed, United States will be destroyed. Maybe China will also be involved in this. Be the nightmare scenario for all of us.
That is a nightmare. I will. You scared me.
Yeah, and yeah, this would be not. I'm not sure we will survive this.
So what is the? So what's the ideal way that this ends?
The ideal way is for Russia to leave Ukraine as quickly as possible. And end the war. That's the only way.
I couldn't agree more.
To do this, but it's not very likely after everything we've seen. I don't think it is very likely that they will leave Ukraine without a lot of fighting.
So I want to ask one more question that just came in, and then I want to give you a minute to just kind of talk about the game and talk about whatever you want for a second. Really interesting question. Due to the way ionizing radiation works and the way it decreases, how long would a military response take after a tactical weapon being used?
Due to the way how the radiation decays?
Yeah, I guess the question is kind of towards how long would it take to be safe for a military to go fight on land where there'd be a weapon used?
I don't know. It depends on the rain. So if the weapon is detonated above the ground, then it is possible to void out mostly. But there can be some rain out of the fallout. And usually you would have to wait at least 1 week for it to decay. But even then, it is not safe to go there because it is possible for the soldiers to ingest the fallout particles somehow, and they will get some either radiation poisoning later, or they will develop some diseases.
And we saw some of that with the soldiers who were building foxholes in Chernobyl earlier this year.
Yeah, so it's the type of radiation is different, or so you will have different isotopes, but it is very similar, or it is similar to the experience of soldiers that were involved in exercises in the US or in Russia, where they also used airburst to detonate the weapons, and then the soldiers were moving around in this area to as part of the exercise, and still many of the soldiers developed diseases.
Interesting. Thank you for that. Okay, I want to give you the floor for the last couple minutes here. Whatever you want to talk about the game, just give yourself a good plug. I want everyone to go out and buy this game when it comes out.
So I think I don't really want to spend the time on advertisements. So if somebody wants to no more, just visit the website and visit the Twitter account, the YouTube channel. What I would like to do is to ask you and the listeners what kind of databases you think you would like to import in the simulation. So it is possible to import, let's say, KMZ files, objects at specific coordinates, but maybe somebody thinks there is a specific database of military infrastructure objects or
some, that's great, Ivan. Everyone who's listening, if you want to drop some ideas into this Owl Talk, Ivan Stepanov, Nuke AMA room, he's going to be here reading it, so give some ideas to him. And Ivan, you know, one thing we didn't cover that I know you want to talk about was OpenRISOP. Do you want to talk about that for a minute?
Yes, sure. So the OpenRISOP is a database of military targets that was developed by David Teeter, who was formerly employed at Sandia Corporation and who was involved in developing the attack plans on the Soviet Union. And he used this experience to create a database of potential targets for nuclear weapons in the United States. So it is a large database of ICBMs, of military bases, of weapons production sites, and all. It is all categorized, very well researched. He spent years developing this database, and we worked together to assign some weapons to these targets and to run some calculations in the nuclear war simulator. And if you go to the GitHub page, you can see the database, and you will see a number of scenarios with different target compositions and different weather conditions, with the with some detailed fallout simulation. See how what are the fatalities in such scenarios. So it's actually a very nice project.
And I posted the link to that in our chat. Here, so people can go play with that. Is that database in Nuclear War Simulator yet?
Yes, it is.
It is.
It is. What I did is I imported this military bases into the simulation in such a way that you can easily add them to your scenarios. So,
very cool.
There are a couple of hundreds military bases, and you can, if you are creating a scenario where United States is involved, you can import all of these military bases with a single click. And the scenarios that we developed together with David, they are present in the nuclear war simulator as scenarios. So you can run them, you can analyze the results, and you can see, for example, how fallout is affected by the weather. So how on different days you can get a completely different fallout picture.
Very cool. And I kind of cut you off, but you were saying people can add KMZ files and shape files and all sorts of different databases as well? Or what you want people to suggest?
So what I want to suggest is maybe a different type of database that I'm not aware of that is widely used by people. Or maybe there is a database of objects that should be added to the simulation or maybe there is a website where there is a large collection of different military objects that are potential for nuclear weapons, so that either I can import this into the simulation so people can easily use it, or I can create the tools that people can easily import such databases into the simulation. I imagine that your community is spending a lot of time looking for such objects.
Oh, yes.
Developing, creating these databases, and it would be great to somehow use this data in the simulation.
You're already getting some suggestions here, so we'll continue to ask people about that. And there is a very easy way to reach Ivan on his website, just a contact me thing. That's how we actually got in touch. I know we're a couple minutes over here. I know it's late for you. I don't want to keep you too late. Really, really appreciate you doing this. This is an awesome conversation. Hope maybe once the game comes out, we can get you back and you can talk it up some more, talk about how it's evolved and what's new with it. Now, I'm sure a lot of us are going to play it. I think it's a really awesome project. Do you have any closing thoughts?
My closing thoughts is, I want to thank everyone for joining. I hope you will be enjoying this simulation, or you will find it useful once it comes out. And I'm looking forward to reading your comments on the database that you think that can be imported into the simulation. And thank you very much for organizing this and for finding the questions.
Cool. Well, hey, thank you very much. I appreciate it. We'll keep in touch. And thank you everyone for attending, and stay tuned for our next one. All right, Ivan, have a good one.
Yes, have a nice evening. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.